Good morning. What a beautiful day in New York, New York. My name is Mark Farrell. Welcome to the Progressive Radio Network. The show is Insights, First Day of Summer. This is the song, or the day, not the song. There's a lot of great summer songs. This is the day I've been longing for. How about you, right? But then again, I started thinking about this morning. It's the longest day of the year, right? The most daylight. But then from here on out, it goes a little bit south. Every day's a little bit shorter. Okay, but we got to focus on the positive. I love this day. Summer's great. It's been a long, wet, cold spring. So let's bring it on. Into it. Totally into it. Wherever you are, hopefully you have a beautiful day as well. So we're talking about a lot of different things today. But also, they're very connected with motivation, what drives people, whether it's personal or professional. All these different factors or ramifications that draw people into one direction or another. It sounds kind of heavy, right? A little bit deeper than my typical show. But it's going to really relate to you, I think, on multiple levels. And it starts this way. I was asked the most simple, benign question the other day. And I said to this person, I've never been asked this question. And you know what they asked me? They said to me, Mark, what motivates you? And I paused and looked at this person, and I said to them, I have never been asked this question. How could I have not been asked this question? Pretty funny, right? So I said to them, well, it kind of comes down to two things, like fitness and impacting people's lives. That's what motivates me, because there's nothing like just feeling alive. And so my temple is, you know, my body and taking care of my body and going to the gym and running and swimming and biking and all those different facets of fitness and weightlifting that make me feel just whole. That really is very, very important to me. Like for people going to church, religion, this is sort of my religion. And secondly, equally as important, if not more, when I speak at live events, even on the radio, during the show, but more so at live events, because I can see people, I can interact with people post-talk and interact with them and with the question and answer sessions. And sometimes we have like meeting and greeting sessions afterwards. So that's a great time where I get to actually meet people and talk to them, and they, you know, give me feedback. And also in certain other jobs I've had in positions where people have told me directly what outcomes have had or what have happened to them due to something I've mentioned or said, or, you know, a door I've tried to open for people, because I always believe in trying to open doors for people, because first of all, it's just so difficult to get doors open on your own volition, even with great experience, resume. And so if you have someone that you can kind of, you know, have them kind of get that door open just ajar for you, then I think that's a great benefit, because, you know, people have to have the skills, of course, to back it up. But going back to that initial question, you know, what makes me motivated? So that made me think about other people and what gets them motivated, because a lot of people who say to me, wow, how do you stay so motivated? I'm just surprised by the sheer number of people who aren't motivated or find it very, very tiresome to get motivated or don't have a real force. So I was trying to think of a few things, components that make people motivated. Number one, goals. A lot of people have goals. And these can be personal or professional, getting married, maybe getting sober, losing weight, putting weight on, getting healthier, meeting a soulmate. That's huge. So that requires maybe living differently, living a different lifestyle, maybe putting yourself in certain environments that you're not comfortable with, and kind of reevaluating yourself, maybe why you're not meeting the right people. Maybe you're deflecting. Maybe you're not ready. You know, so there's all these different things in terms of goals you have. Maybe people have promotional goals, like at work. You aspire to become your manager or your supervisor, or just maybe a different position altogether at work, maybe in a more creative aspect. And we're going to get to something very interesting in a few minutes about getting to goals and accomplishing them And sometimes you have to quit to get ahead. Yeah, right? Interesting. And I was reading a book about that, and I want to share that with you in just a few minutes. But what about vacations? I know a lot of people think, like, if I book a vacation, that's something to look forward to. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great because I know my wife and I are always like, okay, we come back from vacation. We're like, what's next? Where can we go? Let's start investigating it now, researching it now, because I've always felt like I always need something, not need something to look forward to, but when I have something to look forward to, I think I always have something. And this may sound silly to you, but maybe there's something of a close parallel. Like, for example, if I find that, you know, maybe I'm having a bad week, like maybe I was trying to get a big conference talk or a seminar out west and, you know, I didn't get chosen and I was one of the last few and it was going to be a great gig or conference to be exposed in front of a lot of decision makers. And of course, the pay would be good and be fun to go out west. If I didn't get that gig, then I'd be like, oh man, what a drag. And you know, you kind of get a little bummed out. So sometimes what I do is if I'm working on a woodworking project, for example, I'm working on a closet downstairs. It's not a huge closet, but it's kind of a walk-in closet. It's like, I don't know, 8x5. So I've sketched out the closet. I'm going to make it more of a walk-in, all shelving and some closet rods. So that makes me feel really good when I'm productive that way because I can see a tangible result. And it takes my mind off being bummed out about something else because I feel very positive about what I'm able to do or go to the gym or take a run, take a ride, play with the kids. So maybe for you, if you're having a week, hopefully it's not this week. Hopefully it's something in the past. But we all have bad weeks, bad days, you know, bad hours. But hopefully they, you know, they turn around quickly because we can find obviously the positive in something, the silver lining in something, or realize, you know, hey, I made a mistake or something was totally out of your control, which is, you know, the reality. I would think money is a major motivating aspect to people to aspire to work harder, to get out of bed every damn morning, man, to put your foot on the ground because there's a thing called mortgage and a thing called rent. And there's a thing called cutting your teeth in this world, right? Like I give a talk at high schools called Senior Preparedness. So these are for graduating seniors. And it's about real world reality. And the reality is that, you know, nothing comes free. Nothing certainly of great value besides kindness and friendship and maybe opening doors for people. But, you know, that's an overall generalization. But in terms of working hard, that's a great motivation, right? Money. We all want, you know, I don't need a great deal more money, but it would be nice to have, you know, more money and income because, you know, when you have kids, you worry about their future. You worry about, you know, your value as myself, as a business owner and as an employee. I also work at a different radio station, a classic rock station in New Jersey. So you always worry about these things, bills, you know, things coming down the line. So if you could, you know, your motivation is money, that's a good thing because maybe you want to go on more vacations. Maybe you want to aspire to become your supervisor, but you need a master's degree. So there's all these different reasons. So going back to the main point, again, what fuels you to be motivated? I think these are all, you know, very, very practical, obtainable, and very common goals. So I think it comes down to drive. Like a lot of people, we all know different people that have different variations and levels of drive. And I would say, this is kind of my family always makes fun of me because they're like, you know, so many people, like my kids are going through my phone. How many people do you have in here? 2,000 people in your contacts? This is pretty funny. Are you like me? Do you list people in your contacts by relationship? I do because there's no way you can remember everybody's name. So, for example, people who I have hired me, they're under TALK, T-A-L-K, and then their name or their organization because you just simply can't remember everything. And it's sorted differently in my contacts on my computers. But the amount of drive that varies from person to person, I find it very, very interesting. And I think that innately we're wired differently. And I think certainly environmentally when we're brought up, big time. And I know this because I know there's a few people that are close to me that weren't really big outdoors people. Excuse me. On a nice day, they would be happy to sit inside the house. And, you know, I'm just like your stereotypical kid from a family who would be like, it's a beautiful day, get your rear end outside type of thing. And so for me, even on a cloudy day, I would love to be outside. When I'm off home, you find me outside working around the house in a garage, organizing or putting all the stuff away from a project that I just finished, getting ready, ramping up for the next project, like this closet I'm going to be redoing. I got to put all my tools away so I can find them again so I can lose them again. You know, that's kind of how it works. It's a kind of a controlled chaos situation. So, but I definitely believe that there are more people that have, I can't say more, but there definitely is a difference between people who have drive, like a natural drive. And you all know those people, but there's a certain amount of people that just have way too much energy. That you're like, all right, buddy, back it down. Come on, back it down. How could you be that much? How could you be that highly driven? Excuse me. A little pollen in New York air today. First day of summer. I guess you have to have that, right? So I think it's pretty interesting that what motivates us? And again, it went back to the simple question. Someone said to me, what motivates you? So what motivates you? I want you to ask yourself that question because I think that's imperative because we should all know what fuels us. And I'm sure it's probably or very close to what are the, you know, factors or components that I mentioned, whether it's a specific goal, promotion, vacation, money, a spouse, a partner, a better body, a better lifestyle, maybe being kinder to yourself, maybe being kinder to other people because, you know, maybe you're a believer in karma. What you put out there is what you get back. Maybe you're maybe you fear failure, which many people do because obviously, you know, who wants to fail? Nobody wants to fail. But, you know, there's a lot of good things that come with failure, which actually we're going to talk about in a few minutes because I think there's so many more lessons. I think there are a lot of great lessons when you succeed, but when you succeed, you don't kind of strip away how you succeeded. You don't analyze it like you do when you don't succeed. For example, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago how my son's soccer team, they're 8 years old, but they were undefeated up to 2 weeks ago. They had 8 wins and 1 tie, and it was a 10-game season. So I mentioned to you this because I was wondering about the impacts of athlete motivation, specifically with 8-year-olds. Now, I thought and still think that the team that I was coaching had some good skill. I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being exceptional, they were a 7. And that's overall encompassing, and I'm going to explain that 7 number because I think it's important. So I explained to you that I was curious, I was actually putting out the question if athlete motivation, motivating young kids can have a big difference, a noticeable and measurable outcome. And I've concluded as of this past Saturday, yes, it does, definitively. Because the team that we played on Saturday was clearly better. Even though we scored, my son scored actually, in the first like 90 seconds. It was pretty amazing. But their 2 goals that they scored were from the 18-yard line, outside the 18-yard line. Now we're talking 8-year-olds. Outside the 8-year-old line, and these balls were sailing over the goalie's head. So what does that say? They have mad foot skills. They're good. They're gifted. just like Mexico. When Mexico beat Germany, yes, we have to stop and give that a round of applause. Sorry, Germany, but, you know, it's really funny, especially given the certain circumstances with our certain person in the White House, which is doing unthinkable things to people mostly from Mexico and different neighboring countries. Anyway, I digress. But it was great to see Mexico kick some butt. Fantastic. And to also be a third of the hosting countries along with Canada and U.S. in 2026 with the World Cup. So anyway, my talk was about, you know, was it actually having an impact on these kids? So here's the deal. We go into Saturday's game, 8 wins, 0 losses, 1 tie. Final game on the line. Now, I have never said anything about wins and losses to the kids except for the fact that it doesn't matter. It's just about how hard you play, how much you learn, how much fun you have, etc. And that's the truth. But in my head, I'm thinking all along, like, we got 4 wins, 5 wins, 6 wins, 7 wins, 8 wins? All right, something's going right here. So it can't be just all of what I'm coaching on the field. It's got to be something that's taking place on the sidelines. Some of the words that I'm imparting, some of the sage advice, hopefully. Who knows? You know, I'm kind of making this stuff up as I go along in terms of the coach aspect, in terms of being a person who can make an 8-year-old feel that they're making a huge difference on the field. So the reality is the game ended once again a tie. And guess who we played? The same team that we tied earlier in the season. Now, these kids were better, clearly better. But the reason why we won was because we have, and I kept telling them this, you have heart and soul. You have the heart to win, and you have the soul that you won't quit. These kids have, and I didn't say it so succinctly to them at this point regarding their skills. The other team had much better skills. I can't say much better, better skills. And a lot of them were bigger. As a matter of fact, a few of them I wanted to say, like, can I see your birth certificate? Because you clearly don't look 8 years old because you're a foot and a half taller than these kids. But that happens in every team and every sport kind of. Well, not every team, but in every league has a few of those kids. In this particular day, in this particular, you know, game that was on the line, this is what we were facing. So anyway, they did a stellar job. And so the reason why, I think, again, I told them at halftime, I said, listen, this is the team that we played earlier in the year, and we tied them. Now, here's your chance to prove to them, and more importantly, to prove to yourself that you are a better team. Okay, so they may have some kids that are bigger than you, but that doesn't mean that they're faster than you. That doesn't mean that their ball skills are better than you, because you guys have heart and tenacity. You guys don't give up. When we had only 6 or 7 team members on a field with no substitutes, and I just kept rotating you on hot days, you guys didn't give up. And that's why you're going to win this game. And if you don't win this game, it's because it's not nothing that you did. You left everything out on this field. Every DNA, every morsel, every thought, every particle of matter, that energy that concerns soccer that was left on this, whatever I'm making up right now and spewing out. But it worked. So anyway, so the game finishes and we're tied. So I go up to the coach and I'm saying to myself, you know, this is really ironic because now we finish our season. You know, we tied you early in the season. He's like, yeah, I remember. And I said, well, we just finished 8 wins, 0 losses, and 2 ties. He goes, so did we. I said, so we're the only team that you tied this season? He goes, yep. I said, well, isn't that the best finale possible for both teams, for both kids, for both 8-year-olds? Because it proves to both teams, so 26 kids-ish, that that you can win, but even when you tie, you win because of how hard you work. And yeah, you know, maybe if we would have had a shootout, you know, it's not at that level. Someone said, why didn't they have a shootout? I'm like, well, they're 8-year-olds. They don't need to have a shootout. But even if they lost, it wouldn't have mattered. Even if I only won 3 games a season, it wouldn't have mattered. But it was a very interesting kind of an experiment, how kind of it evolved to the point where I was really kind of looking forward to the pregame and midgame talks because I was just saying to myself, wow, well, this is pretty interesting how kids of this age can be motivated. And I see it in her eyes when I speak at schools and stuff, but this is different. Athletics is totally different because you could be having an off day. You didn't get enough sleep. You're tired. Or the game could be on a Friday night versus a Saturday morning. You know, kids in the morning time on a weekend sometimes, you know, really don't react that well to early morning hours. But I have to say that it paid off. And congratulations to the Lightning League. Pinelanders and Team Lightning, because they did a heck of a job. And speaking of sports, this was a really, really good story I want to share with you. A high school pitcher, this happened about 10 days ago in Minnesota. The states were at stake. So if this team that was on defense, they were on field, if they won, they were going to go to the states. And so the pitcher's name is Ty Cohen. Ty Cohen. Spelled K-O-E-H-N. And he was on the mound, and he struck out the person who's at bat. This ended the game. So you can search this on Google. The whole team went crazy, sheer pandemonium. But Ty, the pitcher, ran right up to the batter and gave him a hug because that was his childhood friend. And so, again, the whole place is going bananas because now this team from Minnesota is going to the States. I guess I don't know whether it's going to be the finals or they're going to be in a playoff situation. But anyway, they were totally stoked to win this game. And the pitcher, Ty Cohen, ran right up to his childhood friend who just either – I forget whether he didn't swing and it was a strike, called a strike, or he swung at it and that was his third strike. Meanwhile – Ty walks him to his dugout, to his friend's dugout. His name is Jack Cacone, believes. Jack Cacone. And then proceeds to celebrate. But how astute is this kid, Ty, a high school sophomore player? I mean, he won. He advanced to the States. But you know what? He spoke later and said, you know, winning this game is not more important than my friendship with this person, Jack, that I've known since, he was, I don't know how old. I mean, that speaks volume, I think, about this kid, his integrity, how he was raised, his ethics, his parenting skills, not his parenting skills, his parents' parenting skills, prioritizing, his friends' needs. I mean, here it goes. I mean, all his teammates, were going like crazy around Ty, but Ty like ran away from the swarm of happy teammates and ran right to the crestfallen friend of his to make him feel a little bit better, to console him. And that, I think, just is a life lesson for so many of us who just get lost immediately. And it's understandable. I wouldn't have blamed the kid or any adult, just to throw your glove up in the air and, grab your teammates and, yell and smile and put your fist up in the air and be like, yes, 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 we did it. But I think it takes a greater sportsman or a sports person should be nowadays to take a half a second, because actually going back to the soccer, immediately we line these kids up. And when I say to him, you are allowed to say two words to the opponents. Great game or good game. That's it. Nothing else. They say anything else to you, that you don't like, you just keep walking. Great game or good game. That's it. And to the referees, thank you very much. So I instill that sportsmanship. That's huge for me because everything that I teach these kids on the field is transferable into life. I know they're 8 years old, but I said the way you work on the soccer field is the same way you work in the classroom and around a house, helping your parents out. Of course, there's always time for fun and everything, but you work hard. You do your best. And so here's this kid, Ty Cohen, just threw his last pitch, man, going to the States, and he runs, makes a beeline to home plate, where his best friend, where he grew up with, just lost out on an opportunity to win the States, possibly. And is comforted by his buddy, Ty. I think that's really cool. So hats off to you, Ty, man. I wish you guys the best. And I think that's really something admirable that a lot of us can learn from. And this, we're not talking about sports. We're talking about people in professional settings. We're talking about family settings. We're talking about so many different ways that people can just pause for a moment and congratulate somebody else or console somebody else because, you know, not everybody wins. And when someone's kind of down or someone sees someone who's just kind of downtrodden, that, you know, an encouragement or a smile or something always helps. So I was checking this out recently, and it's a book that came out actually not a while ago, I think like 10 years ago. But it's by Seth Godin, G-O-D-I-N, Godin, Godin, Seth. And the name of the book is The Dip, a little book that teaches you when to quit and when to stick. So, when I give some of my talks, I talk about how I don't like to quit in life, and there's certain scenarios and stories where I'm talking like, even though I'm visually impaired and, you know, it was a hard time for me and I wasn't that good at basketball, I tried out for the basketball team in seventh grade and I made it. And I talk about, during this live talk, about how I would go up to the wall, you know, where they would have that sheet of paper and your name would be on it. It'd be like, oh my God, my name is on it, Mark Farrell. They picked me. Oh my God, I can't believe this. They must be really be hurting for players. Anyway, so I talk about how in basketball and soccer, was there another sport? Those two in particular, I quit. Because once I made the team, the basketball team, there are so many different basketballs flying around during practice. It was so hard to track them. And consequently, I'd either miss a ball or get hit with a ball because it was just, for anyone who's has good eyes, it's just very difficult because, you know, when you have 20 kids on a basketball court and there's maybe 15 basketballs, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of movement. So anyway, my point is that I quit because I wasn't honest with myself and I didn't go up to the coach and say, listen, I have bad eyes, you know. And I'm sure the coach would have said, hey, listen, maybe we can work something out. Maybe you can work with five players over here at a time or the assistant coach. You know, I'm sure there's a bevy of ways that they could have made it work. But I discounted the idea. And I guess being young, I wasn't intuitive enough, or I certainly didn't take the initiative to say to my parents or to say to my brother, which is really sad, who has had the same visual impairment, to say to him, hey, Mike, what should I do? Here's the problem. Same thing with soccer. I was actually the goalie. I know, go scratch your head. I was the goalie, visually impaired. I was actually pretty good. But again, with all the different balls flying around, it was too hard to track. And again, I wasn't honest with myself and I wasn't honest with the coach and went up to the coach and said, hey, here's the situation. I'm having a lot of problems tracking these balls, etc. So anyway, so I quit. And then there's a story I tell about when I'm doing my first triathlon. When I'm at the water's edge, and moments before the gun goes off, I realize I can't see the swim course. So it's a 20-minute story. It's all about resiliency, determination, life choices, because I give a lot of different parallels and metaphors during this talk about, you know, how life, whether you're prepared or not, throws you curveballs. It's how you react and all these different logical and illogical outcomes possible and what solutions you have and how you can stick it out, et cetera. So the reality is I'm talking about I couldn't see the swim course and I could decide to, you know, either go for it or just quit. But then I say to myself, no, I haven't quit. But I have quit before in my life in soccer and basketball. But I felt that those were conditions that were extreme and beyond my control. I think at that age, that's fair to say, because it's really hard to look inward when you're 13, 14 years of age to say, well, maybe I do have a visual impairment. And, you know, what's a disability to a kid at that age? What do they know about a disability? What really is a disability? Well, you're different. You just feel different. And that's the last thing in the world you want to do is feel more different by going up to a coach and saying, I am different. And here's the problems I'm having. So anyway, I thought this book was kind of very interesting because it strikes a chord because I really agree to this because, you know, winners are smart quitters. And I love this phrase. This is not my phrase. This is from the book. Winners are smart quitters because they realize when their current path isn't getting them where they need to be, where they want to be, or what their goal is. They're not getting closer to their goal. So if you think like maybe you're in a position, whether it's a job or maybe a relationship, and maybe you meet somebody who you think is the right person. But for example, they don't want kids and you're dying to have kids. So you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I finally met the person who I think is my soulmate, but they don't share the same goal of having a child or children. And so you have to make up your mind, like, am I going to forego something that really is kind of inherent, a right, a will, a desire, a goal of mine to be with this person for the rest of my life, or possibly walk away from this relationship? And maybe you can find somebody who really is your soulmate, or you're going to have to settle for somebody who maybe is not going to set your heart afire as the person that you're currently with, but doesn't want to have kids. So that's a sacrifice. So sometimes, going back to that line, sometimes, you know, you have to make a smart decision to quit to get yourself ahead. Now, I've done this, and it's not always easy. As a matter of fact, I was actually in a – I didn't even realize this till this split second when I was talking about this. I was almost in a situation a week ago where a job presented itself – a full-time job, and I was going to have to decide whether I was going to give up my speaking business that I've worked really, really hard for the past 6 years. Now, it's just like any business. You hang a shingle. It's not like you open the doors and everyone starts kind of running through the door going, Mark, we want to hire you. John, Mary, Paul, whatever, we want to hire you. No, 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 no. I don't care what business you're in, unless you're giving stuff away, that kind of free business. Reality is it takes a lot of marketing, it takes a great set of skills, it takes networking, it takes hours of planning, and a lot of closed doors and a lot of no's. A lot of no's. Sorry, I'm sorry. We wish we could hire you. We don't have the budget. We had the budget. Next year we'll have the budget. So I was very closely faced with the decision to give up my business, or certainly like 90% of it, because I would only have time for maybe on the weekends or maybe after work hours to do talks. So it came down to the point where I actually wasn't offered the job, but I was actually in a very uncomfortable position, uncomfortable for myself because, you know, sometimes when I talk about this adversity are conditions that really kind of try ourselves, our will, who we are as a person, and many other things. But for me, I was kind of struggling for several days thinking, okay, they're going to offer me the job. If the money's right, it's not going to be the money I truly want, but I could sacrifice that and maybe, you know, earmark or set aside certain time, have an understanding. I was coming up with all these scenarios. But it was funny because I was really prioritizing my speaking business. And that's understandable because just like you, you know, when you dedicate hobby or a part of your profession for so many hours and so many years. Again, it's not a lifetime, it's 6 years, but you know, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and heartache have gone into my speaking business. So I was like, well, am I ready to give this up? So then, you know, I realized I didn't put it so succinctly in my head, but winners are smart quitters. But I was thinking in my head, well, all right, what if I hit the pause button for a while? Hit the pause button, generate some, you know, steady income, and I can still augment my income by the speaking business. But then I'm like, oh man, but I got so many things in the pipeline that are panning out, conferences, really well-paying speaking gigs. So I'm like, oh my God, I got to give these up? So I was really kind of putting myself to the test. So there's a thing called strategic quitting. Right? Sounds funny. I got to really think about how I'm going to quit. Take this job and I guess that's not strategic quitting. That's just kind of losing your cool and kind of going in there. But wouldn't you love to do that one day? Just go right up to your boss. I'm sorry. Take this job and shove it. What? What did you say? I said, take this job and shove it. Have a nice day. Or don't have a nice day. I don't care because I don't work here anymore. That would be fun, right? It would. So strategic quitting. So in order to pursue an option, you have to forego others. So that's kind of what strategic quitting is. And there's all kinds of really interesting phrases that make sense. And I'm not a big person of, I guess, colloquialisms or sayings, but sometimes when they really make sense. I'm not one of these speakers who spew out all these quotes and say, well, winners never quit and quitters never win, like something like that, because I don't believe in it. And I don't think that that really sticks with people. I think that does work for certain people, and we know those people because they have post-it notes all around their computer screen or on their desk. Look around. Are you looking at one, or is one looking at you right now, a post-it note? Is it a pink-colored one, a blue one? Is it one of those really big, extra-large post-it notes? Yeah, then you're like me. No, no, no. That means you got issues, or you're visually impaired, because I just use the big ones because it's easier for me to write big. Anyway, the book is called The Dip, a little book that touches you, teaches you when to quit. So check that out online. It's pretty cool. I think there's a lot to learn from that. So P.S., the outcome of my situation was they offered the job to somebody else. I was like, whew, thank God. And then secondly, my first reaction was, really? I'm not going to get the job offer? I was kind of taken aback. I'm like, well, I'm qualified. I'm overqualified. And really? You're not offering me the job? Wow. But it worked out. And like a few hours later, I'm like, oh man, that's so cool. I'm glad I wasn't offered the job, because then I would have been put in a conundrum of whether I have to give up the speaking business. If the money was right, you know, would I had all these scenarios, would I parcel up my business, maybe sub out some of my work and still take a cut? And what would I do with incoming business and business that's still pending? Because I have, you know, just like any other business, you have to put out quotes or proposals. So I'm like, what if all these start funneling back positively? Yes, you got the work. Yes, you got this job. Yes, you got that conference. So all these thoughts were going through my head. So it was a little bit of a, hectic week in the upstairs department in my head, in the Mark Farrell head, the brain of the insane. So that's kind of ended. So I was really, really happy that, you know, I said, I was very gracious. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your consideration. I was really happy to be considered, yada, yada, yada. But the reality is I'm psyched that it did not come through because it gives me the opportunity to continue to do what I really, really want to do, is impact people's lives through all the things, all the decisions that I made that were wrong, and certain situations and scenarios that were unavoidable that I didn't have control over, like my disability, and things in that realm and trajectory that kind of set my life in a certain path and situation. But, you know, I'm not a religious person, but I definitely believe to some extent that we all have, I can't say predetermined paths in life, because I don't know. I don't see it, because I believe that here's my definition of miracles. Miracles are things that are the result of hard work and a little bit of luck. Maybe a lot of bit of luck, but a lot of hard work. Like, for example, when I got my driver's license when I was 25, because they invented these glasses like a surgeon wears or like your hygienist wears, I remember my mother kept saying, it's a miracle, it's a miracle. And you know what? For her, I think it was a miracle, because she felt so guilty. And I'm talking about her in the past tense. She's alive. She's 91 and she's fierce. That's right. Go, Mom. She goes to the gym 2 or 3 times a week. She's probably doing one-arm push-ups right now. Maybe on her knees, but that's okay. So anyway, she was like, it's a miracle, Mark. You got your driver's license at 25. And I'm so happy, because she was so guilt-ridden, the fact that I wasn't able to drive. And she knew how much it would have changed my life and how much it would have changed my brother's life, because he, too, also didn't drive. And we both got these telescopic devices, which I need to bring into the studio so I can show you on Facebook Live and also on our PRN page. But anyway, and I did feel that way. As a matter of fact, I think I should bring this in as well. I'm so glad I brought this topic up. There was a newspaper article that was done on me about receiving these glasses and getting my driver's license and what kind of impact it had on me personally, professionally, my confidence, because, you know, it's kind of like a rite of passage. And sometimes it's different for urban kids, because when you turn 17, boom, you get your license. Whoosh, bye, Mom. Bye, Dad. I'll be home whenever. See ya. It's kind of rite of a passage, right? Just like learning how to ride a bike. I mean, again, it's kind of different for urban kids. Sometimes it's not that important because not all urban kids have bikes, because where do you keep a bike? You got to carry up five flights of stairs sometimes. You know, it's different circumstances, environmental. But it's kind of neat when these things come together and when people feel like a miracle's happened, whether it's a health miracle or a cure, which I really hope is the situation. If you have something that needs to be cured, I really hope, fingers crossed, knock on wood, that that happens to you. But I'm not a huge believer in miracles. Again, going back to how I prefaced this situation or this conversation, I believe it's about hard work. Maybe it's timing, but I believe there's luck involved as well. I don't know. What do you think? You know, you can always email me about anything. Well, you know, keep it somewhat relative. You can email me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com, mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. I did get an email the other day from somebody out in Arizona, and I'm sorry, I'm remiss in remembering this person's name, but they said something about one of the topics I talked about, and they also said, you know, we're not sure if you speak at schools only, but no, I speak at schools and corporations and colleges, kind of the whole gamut. And I realized, and I wasn't sure I was able to translate and transfer my talk to the corporate world. And someone set me straight. The guy who's my mentor in this world. And he said to me, Mark, are you kidding me? Everything that you've overcome needs to be heard in a corporate environment so people, employees, can understand that they too can overcome. And one of my mantras and my sayings is, you can't be you when you're not yourself, right? It makes sense. And also, my difference makes me stronger. And there's a few other ones that apply. Because it's true, we're all different, and that's a great thing. And so remember that when you feel different, because this is something that I strive to be. Now, I don't strive to be different to be different. I just strive to be myself, and that's who I hope you strive to be. So on that note, if you'd like me to speak at your college, school, corporation, camp, conference, seminar, training, whatever, check out markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com, and the phone number is 201-344-7138, 201-344-7138. Gary Knowles next. I really hope you enjoy your summer. It's not like we're going anywhere, but as the first day of summer, I feel like that's something that should be said. If it's raining where you are, don't fret. The sun always shines in your mind, right? My name is Mark Farrell. Gary Knowles next. Have a great day.